Welcome to episode 6 of the Roundtable Podcast. Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to the Roundtable Podcast.
Each week, we invite writers to come on the show and pitch their story ideas to Dave and I and our esteemed guest host.
You'd think this wouldn't crack me up. I love it. And yes, and then we sit down and we talk
Spit
about it.
Spit it out, Dave. Spit it out.
Spit it out. Just say the words, Dave. we work through the story. We talk about character. We talk about plot, theme. We dig into it, discuss it, trying to transform the raw idea into a writable story, what we like to call literary gold.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun. No, do I need to get a sound bite for dun, dun, dun?
I don't know.
You do that every time. Well, not every time. You did it last time. You did
it. I do it a lot.
You do it a lot. And maybe I need to...
you just said doo-doo.
And now we're going for the highbrow audience. Awesome.
In case my students are listening, that's all.
Okay, good. Keep the YA audience engaged. Got it.
That's right.
So maybe I should go with literary gold.
There you go.
No, God, I can't believe you'd even entertain that notion.
I'm just here for support. That's all.
And so much more. And let's put that to the test, shall we? Let's roll into this episode formally and appropriately. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our singular pleasure to have on the Skype line with us this evening a woman who, for me personally, defined the podosphere when I first heard her voice, her sultry, dulcet tones playing on J. Daniel Sawyer's Down from 10, and since then discovered a veritable library of Alexandria of texts, stories, and books. From a truly remarkable woman. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Philippa...
Valentine!
See, and I choked on the miss. I totally choked on the miss because you are not... You aren't Miss Valentine.
You just sounded like you needed some help.
And I appreciate that. And trust me, I'm going to depend on that later on in the episode. Is it Mrs. Philippa Valentine?
Oh, I guess it's Ms.
Ms. There we go.
Well, I could be Mrs. Morris, but I won't be.
I see, and this is one of those things, we heard about the nuptials, and so many of us celebrated when that happened, and nobody expected you to become Philippa Morris.
Well, there's a good reason for that. I'm sure as writers you know that no one gives up a B for an M.
Oh, heck no. Sliding down the alphabet scale?
No.
Hell no.
Only if I'd married someone with an A name would I.
That's right. And Philippa Morris, you'd get all of that bad press with the cigarette companies and
yeah,
all of that stuff.
No.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to rock that boat.
Thankfully, it's not a B and an M.
Again, with the poo-poo.
Teenage audience again.
Okay, we've got the YA audience covered, Bri. We're good.
Okay, all right. I'll stop.
Oh, Pip, we have been following... The delightful, wonderful, always seems to be upscaling roller coaster of the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, the Books of the Order, and so many other projects that you have engaged in personally and that you are working with T. What's coming out? What do we need to know about?
How long have you got?
Well, we got about 5-10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, quickly then.
For you.
Yeah,
we have plenty
of time. If I talk in a sultry voice, do I get longer?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, shit. Now T's going to be coming on my door. He's going to be getting up in my business.
Honestly.
He did say this was explicit. So
yeah, but see, Brian, you're killing me
audience,
here.
Audience, close your ears.
Literally.
He doesn't mind if I pimp in a sultry voice as long as it's the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences.
Okay, well, then for the delight...
Make of that what you will.
For the delight of the hosts and our listeners, please pimp in a sultry voice the wonderful projects coming down the road.
Well.
Oh, God.
It's amazing you should ask, Dave. But coming in... May, we have the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, Book 2, The Janus Affair. You know what an affair is, don't you, Dave?
Yes,
it's something
Pippa.
That Steam is due. I can't maintain it now. You're making me laugh.
Oh,
yeah, so we've got the Janus Affair is coming, and we've got all the covers out, and we're working on the second volume of Tales from the Archives, which is going to surround the release of the novel, and it's going to be another 12 short stories set in the ministry. So that's going to be May, pretty much covered.
Is that going to be an anthology or a podcast?
It's going to be a podcast, an anthology, you know, a fairground ride, a balloon show,
you know, a t-shirt line. We're rolling it all out.
Yeah, a line of action figures. I don't know.
Oh, no, that I would pay cash money for that.
That would be awesome. Yeah,
that would be awesome.
I'll tell T to get onto that.
That's right. Liza Braun is an action figure.
So yeah, we've got the ministry coming out, and we love the cover, and we're very excited. We're going to be going in May to various steampunk events. We're going to be at Balticon, and yeah, May's pretty full on. And then you know, after May comes June, and in June will be towards the end of June will be the Shifted World series that I'm starting with Pyre Books.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, this is a book I wrote back in before Geist, actually. And it was sort of being pitched at the time when high fantasy really wasn't what people were buying. It was more urban fantasy. And so after Geist and the Ministry book sold, I was able to get Hunter and Fox, which is the first book, sold. So very excited to be working with Pyre Books and the lovely Lou Anders. And yeah, it's really exciting. It's going to be in trade with a pretty, pretty cover. And then after that, in the end of August, wrapping up 3 months of absolute craziness, is it's going to be Wraith, which is the third book of the order that comes out with Ace. And I just saw the cover, and Merrick made the cover this time.
Yes.
Yes.
It's gorgeous, by the way.
Yeah. 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 Jason Chan does some wonderful work. So, yeah, it's and in between doing, you know, I just sold a novella to a collection about, I think Ace is putting it out, that's steampunk fairy tales. I did the steampunk Wild Swans, which so there's a few things.
Awesome. please, Pip, if you would, send me the links to those so we can put those in the liner notes, yo.
I'm not quite sure when the anthology is coming out, but it was a lot of fun to write, so.
Okay. I know that you did some podcasts with Geist. Initially, the Books of the Order. Are you going to be doing any more of those smaller short story releases around Wraith and Spectre?
Yeah, I might do that. I was contemplating doing some short stories and novellas of my own, and
awesome,
releasing them by under T and I have a little company called Imagine That Studios, where we release, you know, bits and pieces that we do and different things. So,
sure. Is Coro Studios still in existence?
Sorry, is
Coro Studios?
Oh, well, that's Coro Studios has kind of been
okay, absorbed into.
He took the Coro and though any podcast that I do, I still say come out of Coro Studios. But
sure. This all goes back to my origins of listening to Chasing the Bard, and hearing Coro Studios always. Yes.
Well, you know what? Coro Studios is sitting right here. It's this MacBook Pro right next to me.
And the lady in front of it tapping the keys.
Yes.
Awesome.
So yeah, I'm a few things going on. I'm not sure. We'll see how crazy and frazzled I am after the Janus Affair and Hunter and Fox come out. And hopefully, I might have some time to do some guy stuff. And next year, the final book of that series is coming out. It's called Harbinger. And also next year will be the second book of the Shifted Worlds. And we're working on the third Ministry book.
So you basically have the next 2 or 3 years of your life. Not mapped out, but you can see the benchmarks along the way.
I can see what's going to happen next year, sort of. But I was thinking about Geist came out in October 2010, and by October this year, I will have had 6 books out.
Wow,
which is insane.
That's almost Lolian in
I know.
Magnitude.
I he's going to hunt me down and hurt me. It's out. So you know, yeah. So I didn't, but the thing is, I didn't write them all in the last, like, 2 years.
Well, yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of fudging it, really.
Well,
nobody has to know that.
Yeah, well, no.
Well, oops. Now they do.
Oops. Oops. And we got a signed release. It's all good. Yes.
All right. Here first, folks.
You heard it here first, yeah. Breaking news from the Roundtable Podcast. Why don't we, instead of breaking news, why don't we break for a promotion? And when we get back, let's get our guest writer on here and talk about some stories. Yes, Dave, what a great idea. Come on, back me up here.
Awesome.
Holy crap.
You can edit out that silence.
Oh, hell no. I'm leaving it in, dude, because you're the one that left me hanging there. Pip, you're okay. You're the guest host. You can leave me hanging. Okay. Brian, you're supposed to have my ass, brother.
You know, it's I get so used to your voice that I was dozing.
This is what happens when T and I do the shared desk thing.
Really?
But we turn it into funny banter and put some music over it.
Oh, God. See, we should take a page from the Pip and T book.
We need a bell, too, so we can go ding.
No, I can't. I will say ding, but Pip, T owns the ding.
That
bell,
I've got it right here, but I don't use it.
So. Yeah, see, exactly. That's my point. It's T's bell. We ain't going to fuck with T's bell. Okay, let's we'll break. I know, I said we were going to do this like 5 minutes ago. Let's break for promotion, and when we come back, we'll talk about some stories.
I think that's an excellent idea, Dave.
Thank you, Brian. Folks, stay tuned.
Hi, this is Hugh, the host and editor of the Way of the Buffalo podcast. Twice a month, we present the best short fiction of all genres, thought-provoking interviews, and other diverse entertainments. You can find us online at wayofthebuffalopodcast.blogspot.com or search for us on iTunes. Some people say that short fiction is going the way of the buffalo. Come join us, won't you?
Okay, welcome back. Let's roll into the primary thrust of the Roundtable Podcast, which is talking about stories. And we can't talk about stories unless we have a guest writer. And this evening, our guest writer is the one and only, and I called her a rising star, and I honestly think she is, Latrice McKinney. Latrice, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. You're so sweet.
Oh, no. I've read your blog. I saw the story that you sent in, and guys, we're in for a treat on this one. It's a delight to have you on. Tell us about yourself. What do you do? Where you're from? And how'd you get into writing?
Well, I'm from Kansas, so I've heard just about every Wizard of Oz joke there is known to man.
Okay, no Wizard of Oz jokes, guys.
I'm
right. Oh, damn.
And here we go. We start crumpling up paper. Crap. There goes all that.
What I do in my normal life is I am a department manager at the store Von Maur. And I got into writing. I honestly can't remember when I started. It just feels like I've been doing it forever. I like to say that I've been telling stories longer than I've known how to read them, because I used to do that. Like, I was the one who always told scary stories at, like, sleepovers and slumber parties and stuff like that. So I grew up being, you know, the frightening cousin. So other than that, I just fell in love with it. You know, first time I picked up a pen, you know, turned on a processor, that sort of thing. I was just fascinated, you know, because I could escape and go, you know, to this place where no one else could follow me. And then I decided, oh, it would be cool if people could follow me, you know. I won't feel so insane.
You go. So, be a friendly native guide to Latrice's mind.
Pretty much. Mm. It's kind of scary in there, as I've already said. So.
Well, let's find out just how scary it is. Latrice, you've got your story prep all ready to go?
I do.
Well, regale us with the outlines and the story. We'll turn the mic over to you, my dear.
Okay, well, basically, my story is a very, very workable title. The Veil is where Alice Martin is the 11th guardian of the border between the mortal world and Wonderland, the world of dreams. But will she be the first guardian to fall to the Black Queen, who is determined to plunge both realms into eternal nightmare? And we start with Alice already knowing that she's the guardian. I have trouble trying to bring people who don't know what's going on into worlds full of all this stuff. It's supposed to be easier. I completely suck at it. So she knows what she's doing right off the bat. And we follow her through what is supposed to be a normal routine, where she goes in, she slays a few nightmares. Brief side note, nightmares are humanity's terror in physical form, but they are confined to Wonderland. They don't cross over except to occasionally bother people while they're asleep. And you know, she's hunting these things, and the nightmares have slowly begun to become more of a nuisance. They're coming closer to the veil, which is, as I said, the border between our world and Wonderland. And after she's, you know, finished her job, she comes back to our world, where we run into a few of the Alice in Wonderland, where I'm basing this from, characters like the Mad Hatter and the White Rabbit. Well, Addison Hatter runs the Looking Glass pub, and that's her doorway into Wonderland. And so we follow Alice where she thinks, you know, all this is just, they're being bothersome, where Hatter has seen this before. And he's a little perturbed by it, but he doesn't let her in on it. After we find out that the nightmares have been causing more havoc than they normally are, we discover that it's because way back when, in the beginning of Wonderland, there was not a Red Queen or a White Queen, there was the Black Queen. And she just sort of ran amok all over the place. She was just this complete and utter bitch, pretty much. And so, essentially, her either ladies-in-waiting or her daughters or her sisters, I haven't exactly figured out who they are, they overthrow her and they lock her away in the dark half of Wonderland where nightmares come from, called the Nox. And from that point on is where there's a guardian appointed to enforce that she stays where she doesn't cause any more harm. And that was the first Alice in Wonderland that's been, you know, transformed into so many variations, games, and Disney has a hold of that right now. and so here we are, 11 generations later, it's been centuries. And normally, you know, Alice's, they just go across, they knock off a few nightmares, there's no biggie. But now Queen Nefer is starting to rise a little bit because the White Queen has recently passed. And in the bloodline of both the White Queen and the Red Queen is the key to keeping Nefer locked away. So now we have the White Queen's daughter, who is supposed to be this regal and sophisticated, and, you know, the White Queen's all sweet and kind. Princess Odabeth is a spoiled brat, and she does not take her position seriously. Like, her mother died when she was young, and so, you know, being princess, now queen, nobody can tell her no. So she's not used to not getting her way, and she just completely dismantles everything that people have worked so hard for, which is usually how it happens. So now, complications are falling onto Alice's world. Nightmares are coming through into the world physically. And she's finding that she doesn't have to cross over to deal with all of this. It's happening in her world. And Addison Hatter, who is the Mad Hatter, he's supposed to be there to guide her. He's supposed to be there to, you know, give her these answers. But not even he is really sure what's happening now, because this only happened, like, way back when. And he's immortal. There are a few characters in Alice, you know, in from Wonderland who are immortal. So he was there when it happened. It hasn't happened in a really long time. So he has kind of an idea. So he's hasn't been to Wonderland since the first Alice, because he was appointed by the Red Queen and the White Queen, the first ones, to go to our world in order to train these girls, to help them, to, you know, bring them to an understanding of this is what you were essentially born to do. And now that things are kind of reaching this chaotic point, Alice has some pretty big shoes to fill, because no Alice before her has had to deal with Nefer herself. So back to the point I was making earlier, we follow Alice through one mission where things go wrong, and then she comes back to the mortal world. Things are starting to be a little skewed because she's seeing visions of Wonderland where she shouldn't, like buildings are turning into giant trees briefly, that sort of thing. But she's the only one who can see it. And in the mortal world, she has her own complications. Like, she has a mother. I don't know if she has a father. Father hasn't spoken up yet. Mother's kind of loud. She has her best friend, Courtney, who knows that she is a guardian and is always wanting to go with her to Wonderland. And this presents problems because, of course, she can't. And so Courtney's just a little miffed by it in the beginning. But what happens is Hatta finds out that Odabeth is the target of the nightmares going crazy. And it's Nefer trying to kill Odabeth as she killed her mother indirectly. And so Alice now has to babysit. She has to go get Odabeth and bring her to the mortal realm, which completely pisses Courtney off, because here she is getting this girl who she doesn't even know instead of, you know, helping out her best friends the way Courtney sees it. And essentially, I've gotten as far as bringing Odebeth to the mortal realm. She's now a human. Well, she's not human, but she has to take on a human guise, so to speak. And she has to humble herself because she's not a princess in this world, you know, and she can't go around ordering people to do things, which she tries, of course, much to everybody's great displeasure. And what I was wanting to do with the story, essentially, is, you know, I got to thinking about it and thinking about theme after you recommended me that wonderful website. I really enjoyed it, by the way.
She's talking about the Chuck Wendig site, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Chuck Wendig's TerribleMinds.com. Be forewarned, there is blue language.
Okay.
Chuck is unfiltered. Go ahead, Latrice.
And I think what I'm doing with theme is she is physically fighting nightmares, but it's sort of a connection to facing your fears and driving them back, because that's essentially what she's doing. And, you know, at first she's not equipped to do it, but she has to find a way to do it, and she has to figure out how to overcome it. And, you know, her greatest fears rise up, and essentially, you know, Nefer comes around, and she takes her best friend and Odebeth and takes them back to Underland at some point. I have, like, scenes. I don't really have a plot. Okay. So she takes Courtney and Odebeth because they're together, and she just takes them both. And she offers Courtney, you know, a chance to be a guardian or to have a guardian's powers if she will follow her orders, essentially betraying Alice. And, you know, this comes at a point where Alice feels that she, in a way, betrayed Courtney. So, of course, Courtney's going to betray her. So her best friend betrays her. Her mother winds up injured in the entire thing. She ends up breaking off relationships with, of course, the guy that she really, really likes. And she's kind of scared of people finding out who and what she is, like normal people finding. Everybody in Wonderland knows who she is. So she has all of these problems cropping up. And, you know, and her biggest one is in failing, because she was supposed to keep this from happening, and now it is. You know, and she's supposed to protect Odebeth, and she completely, you know, botches that up. And so now she has to face these fears and overcome them.
Okay.
And she has to physically fight her nightmares.
Excellent. Excellent. That's there's plenty of rich material there to work with. Nicely done, Latrice. So we'll start off with first impressions, and we will yield the chair to our esteemed guest host, Pip. First impressions of Latrice's story idea.
Well, I actually love Lewis Carroll. So anything to do with Alice, I find really interesting. And obviously you've got all those deep psychological questions there. I mean, I actually had written down before you actually said that, Courtney lured to darkness, jealous. And then you said that. I was like, yes, I like the idea. For some reason, I started thinking of June. You know, the whole thing about having to fight your fears and let it pass through you and all that.
Oh, Dune. I heard June. Sorry.
Yes, that's how we say it where I come from. Poor English.
Oh, now we're here. We go. Here we go.
Dawn. And since we're talking about Alice, it is called English.
It is so very English. Sorry, Dune. Yes, that makes perfect sense. I got you.
I thought that, yeah, you're right. There's lots of rich, interesting stuff here. I sort of wondered about what sort of powers she actually has, and are the Alice's, is it like mother to daughter kind of thing, or is it like Buffy, just one springs up and they find them and gather them up? So I'd be interested to find that in, because if it's blood, then her mother sort of could come in on that side of things if it's to do with blood.
What about that, Latrice? Did you have that in mind?
What I currently have is that on one hand I had it I thought that I could do it with the bloodline. Like, at one point, either her great-grandmother had been an Alice, or, like, a great-great-aunt or something. And then I have considered, you know, this is Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Alice in Wonderland. If it is something that just goes to the person who's born at, you know, the right moment, the stars are aligned or whatever, that sort of thing. And I honestly haven't pegged just how she's chosen down just yet, to be honest.
Because the both of them, I mean, if whichever way you go, they've got implications. I mean, if you go the Buffy route, then even if she's learned her powers, there's still the uncertainty of, you know, I could get killed and the next Alice comes along and I'm pretty much expendable. And then if you go the bloodline sort of route, then there's, you know, all sorts of things you could do with, like, grandma was crazy and she totally messed up mom and mum. And so there's a lot of rich sort of stuff you could tap into whichever way you want to go on that. And that will sort of also could move the plot forward depending on, you know, does Courtney want to be the next Alice? You know, how it depends on how dark you want to go as well. If you want to make the Courtney character irredeemable, or do you want to make her like, you're not my father, pull back, you know, check the dark side kind of thing.
Well, and that raises a good point. Latrice, this is intended to be a YA targeted book, right?
It is. Okay. Mm-hmm. It is.
But I mean, after the Hunger Games, everything's
yeah.
everything's off, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Everything's up in the air at this point.
It's a free for all.
Yeah. So, there's lots of different stuff. Also, how much romance, I mean, YA usually has a little bit of romance in it, but, you know, if you're going to have a, I was almost thinking that maybe this is just totally off the ballpark.
Go for it.
But I always like a dark hero. So, there was one book I was reading where the character had a boyfriend in one realm, and then she had another boyfriend in the cool fairy realm, and she went back to the boyfriend who was like a tattoo artist, and I was like, really?
Oh. Well, I just listened to that. It was a podcast, right?
Yes. I was like, I would totally have gone with the
wasn't that fairy. The Dreamer's Thread? Wasn't that
yes,
Stella Hutchins?
Yes. Yeah. I was like, oh. Okay. I mean, tattoo artists are nice, but you know. Come on.
Ripped tattoo artists.
Well, I mean, there's another whole level that you can weave in there without you know, going to Mills and Boone or whatever. but everyone loves a good love triangle if you want to go for that sort of thing.
Sure.
There is sort of like an interest between her and Addison Hatta, but she does have this guy that she's kind of crushing on at school as well.
How old is she supposed to be? Like 17 or 16?
She is on the older end of the teenage scale. She's 16, 17.
Yeah.
I'm completely horrible with romance. I don't read it very much. So try.
I read romance when I was like 16, and that was enough. It kept me out. I still remember it.
Well, and if it's something that you're not comfortable with, Latrice, that might be something to dig into.
Yeah. I always think with writers, I mean, since this is an explicit podcast, yeah. I'd say that I started Erotica a la carte, which is my short story erotica speculative fiction thing, because I couldn't write naughty scenes and I couldn't write short stories, so I determined that I was going to try and do that. So sometimes, you know, and again, it's tapping into your experiences as well and putting them, not being afraid to put your experiences in there, even if they're deeply hidden. But, I mean, that's just something you could go for. I mean, YA does tend to have a little bit of, you know, boys.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, is if you are uncomfortable writing a romance scene, as much as they talk, 17-year-olds are pretty uncomfortable with romance too.
That's true.
You know, and so if you like that whole thing that we were talking about exposing yourself, I don't remember, was that in this or was that back in the showcase?
Both.
But both, yeah.
We always talk about exposing
yourself. We're an explicit podcast. Yes, exactly.
Expose yourself and learn to love the whip.
God.
So,
what have you done anyway, to our podcast, Pip?
It's totally innocent. I don't know what you mean.
It's the accent is what it is.
Yeah. I can't be held responsible for
sure. I guess I should say dialect, right?
You were saying?
Anyway, I was saying. So, yeah. So,
back to the story.
Yeah. So the idea is, What the hell was I talking about? See, I do it too.
So romance, it's a, the awkwardness of teenagers.
Yeah, so, you know, to expose your uncomfortableness, for lack of a better term, about romance and approach it awkwardly and approach it, you know, allow yourself to get embarrassed about how you write it, and it may come across a little more genuine with a 17 protagonist. Just a thought. So I'm loving this, and I'm already zeroing in on a bunch of things that I really, if I were to write it, you know, I would do, but you totally do not have to do anything that we suggest.
And oh, that's good point. Yes, give the disclaimer, Brian. Give the disclaimer.
Yeah, so anything that I or Dave or Pip or anyone else on this podcast ever says to you could be complete and total bullshit.
Yes.
You do not have to take anything that we say. We, you know, as much as we all like to think that we know how you should write your book, you're the only one that knows how you should write it. So,
true that.
That said, immediately one of the things that jumped out, and I don't know if we're even at the what if stage, but I want to play with a couple what ifs. One of them is following the nightmares that you said that a few of them come across and kind of attack people in their dreams. One of the big what ifs for me would be, what if once is it Oda Beth?
The princess or the queen?
Yeah.
The princess is Oda Beth, yes.
Oda Beth. Okay, so once Oda Beth comes over, or Alice brings her over, you were saying something about how she, because of her bloodline, she's what is kind of still keeping that fine line of bondage for the Black Queen. Mm-hmm. Or keeping her, you know, a little bit contained. So once she crosses over, what if that goes away? And then the Black Queen suddenly has, you know, all of her power back, or the majority of her power back. And then the more nightmares that come across might cause people to not be able to wake up, possibly. That could be a major problem, because if nothing is holding them back anymore, then more and more people may be unable to wake up and trapped in their nightmares.
CDC, here they come.
Eat off.
Yeah, right. Well, and what if and what they're doing is they're permanently latching onto these people that don't wake up and creating a beachhead for the Dark Queen's, what, Nefer is her name?
Nefer.
Nefer's plan is not to break out of her prison, but rather to go out the back door and come into our world. And her nightmares are going out, creating a beachhead.
I like that.
That would allow her to tear a hole through the back door and claim a whole new Wonderland, ours.
See, that I love, because she is determined to, she wants both realms. It's not just Wonderland that's, you know, in trouble. While Wonderland was what was attacked initially, because that's where she was, she did want to cross over, because Wonderland is powered by, you know, humanity's subconscious.
Sure. So what better way to control it than to be in control of the source?
Can I jump in for a
second? Yes, please, by all means.
I mean, I love a big bad villain, but I'd also like to see why she's doing it. It's not that she's just because she's bad.
Right.
Is there something else going on?
Ooh. She's doing it because at one point in time, when she was younger, there was a brief period where Wonderland came really close to sort of fading. Mm-hmm. And if she can control where Wonderland's basis is, then she can prevent that from ever happening. She cares about humanity as the means to an end. So she wants to pretty much take control over our realm so her realm doesn't go away.
Okay, right. So we're the power source. Right.
Yes.
And so she's not necessarily a villain.
She might be just trying to protect, from her point of view, she's just trying to protect her people.
And that is vital right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is
That's
key.
What makes her an honest character. And then if Wonderland is powered by our subconscious, what better way to generate that power than to keep everybody in some kind of dream state?
Yes.
I can see a really interesting confrontation between her and Alice about why you're trying to, you know, don't you care about Wonderland? You know, I'm just trying to protect it. I'm not hurting these people. They're asleep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that actually raises, I have so many questions. I'm sure everybody does. I'm going to claim my little slice of the pie here.
Go on.
Start off with this primary question. Latrice, if everybody knows this 16, 17-year-old girl and respects this 17-year-old girl in Wonderland, why does this 17-year-old girl give a damn about the real world when she is badass in Wonderland?
Well, that's where she grew up in the real world, and that's where her home is. That's where her basis is. That's where her heart is. That's where her mother is, her best friend, the guy that she's sort of kind of maybe a little bit talking to. She loves this world as much as she loves Wonderland. And while in Wonderland, she's a hero, here is where, you know, she feels that she's real, because Wonderland is a dream world, not saying that Wonderland's not real, but she feels
you just hit on a key theme right there. Bam. What is real?
Yeah.
I mean, which one is, I mean, that's one of, and again, this might be complete bullshit, but the issue of what do you commit to? You know, you've experienced both of these worlds. You just said she thinks this world is real.
I'm thinking Inception. Sorry.
Yeah, really? Well,
absolutely.
You know, if she has that doubt that Wonderland is real, maybe that is why the Black Queen can start sending her minions into the world now, because the Guardian has stopped believing in Wonderland.
I'd also like to know the consequences for her power. Maybe, I don't know, I'm just going to spitball here. You know, maybe if she stays too long in Wonderland, I'm thinking of the fairy realm, maybe she can get out of sync of time, or she becomes a little less real to herself. Maybe it's harder to come back if she's been there too long. The consequences of her powers then.
I think what we're hitting on here, Latrice, is some points of justification of, you know, definitely anchoring Alice in the real world. And very clearly painting the strokes of love and the ties that link her very profoundly to this side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Wonderland just sounds too freaking awesome. I'm sorry.
Did you say her mother was sick, or was there something?
No, I just know that she has a mother. I don't know if she doesn't have a father, or if father is dead, or if they got divorced. Father hasn't spoken up yet in his regard. Mother doesn't talk about father that much in my head. That sounds so weird. But so far, I only know that there is a mother, and she's really close to her mother.
Yeah, that would make sense.
The dead father is very Disney.
Yeah, which raises another point. And Pip, I wanted to toss this in your lap. The overtones of Buffy the Vampire Slayer are very, very clear. Do you think it's too clear? Do you think it's too derivative?
Well, she doesn't have a Scooby gang, and there's no Hellmouth. I mean, I think as soon as you start talking about any strong female character, Buffy's fairly likely to come up.
True.
I would think it would be all in the execution. I mean, if you start doing Joss Whedon dialogue,
aspire to some Joss Whedon dialogue, really.
Yeah. Well,
don't make her a cheerleader.
No cheerleaders.
No cheerleaders.
Absolutely not.
Right. And then you're okay. Make her like a debate geek or something.
Well, she's actually really big into video games.
There you go.
Okay, awesome. And I didn't mean to imply that I thought it was. I just, because the parallels are so clearly drawn, that it's something I think you need to be aware of as you're writing this. What was Charisma Carpenter's name, character's name in the Buffy series? Was it Courtney?
Cordelia,
thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going, what? No. Okay, cool. So I'm calling up, just sending up that flag, Latrice, just something to be aware of. Brian, what else you got?
Okay. The love interest, I have it. Because
I've got one too,
and
but go ahead.
He's my all-time favorite character, and in like every rendition of Alice, so you have to have him somewhere. But what if the guy that she's interested in is a physical manifestation of the Cheshire Cat?
Oh,
because then he's charming and he's dark.
Oh, man.
And it just appears on you a lot.
You could pull right, over all kinds of awesome characters and yeah. parallel those in. Have you
long
considered
as
that?
As long as she doesn't end up with the white rabbit.
Well, the white rabbit's actually a drunk old man.
I like that.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
He's a drunk old man. He has, like, these little wisps of white that stick up like white ears. So.
And a broken watch.
The Cheshire Cat, I've explored that character, and I actually think it's a she. And, oh, nice. Like, she takes cat form. Mm-hmm. And so she can alter her appearance. And so she speaks with this voice, and people assume it's just guy cat, you know. But it's actually a she, and she rarely reveals, like, that she is female, because she can take a humanoid form if she so chose. But in this one, she's actually come to resent Alice a little bit, because Alice is supposed to be, she's supposed to be doing more than just killing the nightmares and then going home. Alice is sort of like, the Guardian gets their power from Wonderland. They are sort of responsible for Wonderland as much as they're responsible for their world. And now, you know, thinking about it, thinking what everybody was saying earlier, you know, if Alice starts to lean towards favoring her world more, which is something that I think she would naturally do, then the cat resents her for it. Because it's like, you're supposed to be, you know, unbiased. You're supposed to be doing this for everybody. Obviously, you're a teenage girl, so you're, you know, not going to be, you know, Queen Victoria. But
well, let me ask this, and Pip, I'm going to defer to you because you know Lewis Carroll better than I do. Is that consistent with the Cheshire Cat from the original?
Yeah, I've always thought of the Cheshire Cat as this sort of. To me, he's almost like a Puck character, sort of an embodiment of the chaos. I don't. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, no, that's consistent then. I mean, you
yeah. I would think that would be.
That aligns very nicely. I wanted to check on that.
Because, lawful neutral.
Lawful neutral. Here we go. Game reference. Woo!
But I was thinking another romantic one. I mean, there's the lion and the unicorn. You could have the lion. Or maybe I'm just stuck on large cats. I don't know.
You have a lot of felines in your life.
Unicorns are attracted to young girls. Just saying.
Okay, here's my bid. Here's my bid for romance, but it's not romance with Alice.
Okay.
I think it would be really cool if the Black Queen and Addison Hatter were lovers back in the day.
Yeah.
And
she could have driven him mad.
I mean,
with the whip.
With the whip, back to the whip. But really, and maybe she did drive him mad. Maybe his madness is stemmed from his having to betray his love. And now, I mean, there's a wonderful horn you can impale the Hatter on in terms of character conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a great reason for him to have abandoned.
Yeah.
Wonderland.
Absolutely. You know? In fact, the Black Queen could have been working him
in a pub.
In a pub, yes. The Black Queen could have been working him all along, slowly pulling him towards her or poisoning his mind or whatever. I mean, you could come up with all sorts of wonderful literary tropes that she's doing to him. But part of the Black Queen's plan is we need to loosen the grip of the Guardian on the real world so that her plan, assuming that the plan is to take over our world, can manifest. And to do that, she first has to undermine the mentor character, you know, the Obi-Wan. And then when you let the 17-year-old run amok without having a strong mentor to guide her in her path as a guardian, then the barriers start coming down and then the Black Queens start kicking ass. And, you know, there's a wonderful guilt thing there with Allison when it becomes clear to her, or Alice. Sorry. Alice.
Well, her full name is Allison. She's Alice for short. So.
Okay.
You
know, but the guilt of discovering that the reason that, you know, let's have her mother get taken by a nightmare. Or is that too cliche? Is that too overt?
That might be
mm-hmm. a little too much, but have, you know, some see what's going on and realize that it's her fault.
Yeah. You already have the friend that gets pulled across.
Right, but she's a whole different conflict.
Yeah. So. But you don't want to overburden it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, heap some more weight on those narrow shoulders. Yeah, that's
gonna be cruel. What I'm seeing,
Dave wants to turn it into a 10-book series, and that's cool. That's totally cool. Shit. But you know, it depends on what you want.
I'm always thinking series, but you know.
Right.
That's
but
true.
I think the idea of the Hatter being the lover of the Black Queen, when she crosses over, suddenly she has more power over him, and she can kind of twist him and bend him. You know.
There you go.
That would be kind of cool. Like, she left like a little thorn inside his heart.
Ooh, yeah. That's fabulous. Yeah. That's wonderful poetry.
And I was even thinking, what would happen if, while the Black Queen is gaining power, or the more characters that come over into the real world, the less power Alice has, and then has to deal with things
as a mortal.
With almost as a mortal. How does she then conquer?
If the veil gets really big.
Yeah.
Right.
That is totally doable.
I like that. That is totally doable. I like that a lot. What happened to the Red Queen?
The Red Queen, I was torn between her having passed already, or her in sort of stasis, or her having somehow come to our world and got lost, or...
Okay.
I think she didn't know. Didn't you see the movie, Dave? She's dead.
I think she went to Wall Street. She went to Wall Street to make some money.
Right. Yeah, right. Well, and you know, that's a possibility. We've already killed off the White Queen, and we have Odebeth. So I'm not real partial to killing off the Red Queen too. It could be that, you know, I forget whether it was Pip or Brian that said, you know, she's come and got lost in the real world. I think that was Pip. I like that. Because then if for whatever reason Allison sees Addison as a threat or no longer an ally, then the only other person that she can turn to is either Odebeth, lovely, or the Red Queen.
Find the Red Queen.
Yeah. Which, and that could be a way to get her power back.
Yeah. Or discover the real strength that is hers, that may not necessarily be the power of Wonderland, but the power of her as A, the guardian, and B, the source of Wonderland's power, at least one part of the source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was toying with the idea that it was the light side of Wonderland where she got her power, i.e. the Queen's, you know, had bestowed it on the first guardian. So,
okay,
there's a lot that could go with that.
And I had one other what if that might just muddy the waters that much more. But what if when nightmares latch on and force these humans into a dreaming state, what if they have an analog that appears in Wonderland?
Mm.
So, like, let's say that Alice has a bohunk boyfriend in the real world, and he gets taken by a nightmare. And Alice can go into Wonderland and encounter him in his Wonderland state, which might be a more authentic, unrestrained, almost archetypal representation of him. Which like could
he's the caterpillar, right? He's the caterpillar.
There you, there you go. There you go.
Seriously creepy how you guys have all this insight into like little side things that I've put on like napkins and stuff at various places. Because I have written down a scene where... Alice, she's the only one who could cross over physically, but people do visit Wonderland in their dreams. So it could totally happen. Well, I mean, it is the dream world.
Sure.
And so I really like that.
Ooh, what happens if the guy, in Wonderland actually likes her and he doesn't? He wasn't quite so crushing on her in the human world. Wouldn't that just be more exciting to just leave him there?
Oh my God! Yes, more conflict.
Conflict.
Yes. Well, that's awesome because you know maybe and again, Latrice, we are throwing some if we do say so ourselves, some brilliant stuff at you.
I love it. I love keep it coming. Keep it coming.
But in order, one of the things that we run into all the time is. The misconception that a series of events, even cool events, is a story. And that I don't think is true. A story is indeed comprised of a series of events. A series of events does not necessarily make up a story unless you have something to say, unless there's an argument that you're making, unless there's an arc that you're pursuing aggressively. If you don't have something to say with all of the cool stuff you're throwing in, then it's just cool stuff, and it's not going to have the weight and substance that I think this story can have. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Pip, what do you agree with that, or am I off base, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you have to pick and choose which ones of all these marvelous things flying at you at high velocity are going to move your particular theme forward. I mean, if you want to talk about choices and finding the inner strength, you know, to fight off the nightmares, it doesn't hurt to add a little bit of conflict of maybe, you know, what happens if you want to make another choice that feels really good to you. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love the idea of her encountering her beau in Wonderland, and then they, you know, have an adventure, or they are instrumental in whatever the final thing, and Alice has to decide whether she's going to stick with this romanticized, you know, chivalrous thing. And Pip, this is kind of parallel to Chasing the Bard, really, in a couple of ways.
Yeah,
in that respect, or take the real guy back in the quote unquote real world.
Well, if at the end of it she has to choose whether to do the right thing, which is obviously to wake the guy up and get him out of Wonderland, or, you know, to just, you know, keep him around.
Is this a dark tale or a light tale?
Well, but if you have some darkness, then the light looks so much better.
Excellent point. Yeah. Excellent point.
And Latrice, I want to jump in on Dave's message thing, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think sometimes we can trip ourselves up if we overemphasize, or in our heads when we're writing, if we're thinking too much about it. And I don't think that what he means is like you have to have a political statement or that type of message. As much as that, the almost an analogous theme, or and it doesn't even have to be conscious while you're writing it. Yeah. Well, does that make do you agree with that?
What is Allison's issue? What is the primary weakness that she has right now that she is going to overcome through the course of this story?
Yeah.
Something is going to hold up a mirror to her and say, is this what you want to be? And what is her answer going to be when that crisis point is reached? And that's what I mean ultimately by the story that's being told. You can wrap this thing up with all kinds of awesome stuff, and you have a veritable buffet, a cornucopia of awesomeness to pull from. But if it doesn't reinforce, if it doesn't drive Alice towards that confrontation and that choice, then it might be extraneous.
Yeah, and equally, what is it exactly that is keeping her from throwing her hands up and walking away?
Yeah.
From the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, because we can say, okay, what is her weakness? What are these things? But what is she's the chosen one, that's all fine and dandy, but why is she choosing to go forward? What is it that is keeping her from turning away from her challenge?
And, you know, this ties in directly to you said you weren't really sure how the chosen one is chosen. Maybe there's a reason. Maybe there probably should be a really good reason why the chosen ones are chosen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's blood, that's cool. Then you can work the angle of responsibility being foisted upon you that you didn't ask for. If it's because you are a powerful dreamer, and with that powerful imagination, you have the ability to wield the blades and the weapons and the power of Wonderland effectively, then that's a whole different issue and a whole different theme of pursuit.
Yeah, another way that you can go with it is if you're going to go into the Addison Hatter being the lover or the past lover of the Black Queen, maybe he is the one who selects the Guardian.
Ooh, I like that.
He's able to bestow the power on her because he knows that she is going to be the most judicious. She's going to be very compassionate in her dealing of of justice. And he, you know, so, or not. So then,
or maybe or not, he just doesn't give a shit. He just picked somebody at random because he's
just like, you, right, yeah. Pokemon, no, I picked you.
That's true. But if it's one of those things where he wants to,
sorry, my pop culture references are all over the place today.
Absolutely. But if he, you know, if he has a vested interest in this and he's still in love with her, then he isn't going to want to pick somebody who just immediately is going to try to destroy her. So I don't know, but that's just another complication of things.
Yeah. I like the idea of the Hatter picking the Alice.
That's not a bad idea. Because then what did she do to attract his attention? What was there an act that act of kindness, or did he sense that she was an amazing dreamer that had this power inherent in her? Yeah, that I like. Yeah. You know, the whole born to greatness thing.
Yeah.
Might be, yeah, kind of.
It's been done.
It's been done. Also, as a sort of an empowerment thing, it's not just, you know, you had this dropped on your head. I was the orphan. I woke up and found I was Darth Vader's son. it's that she has, yeah, that she has something that is inherently awesome or special about her, or maybe it's her personality, or, you know, she's especially kind, or she's whatever. And that's kind of a nice, I don't know what, I don't want to say message, but that's a nicer sort of thing for, you know, if you're doing YA, you know, that you have something inherently in you that
let me yeah. riff on that a little bit, and Brian, back me up on this, because you have
okay.
Brian's a high school English teacher, so he has and Latrice deals with juniors all day long, so you guys have a better idea than this. But taking what Pip was saying, and I'm going to go 180 on you. If Addison had no reason at all to pick Alice, and Alice discovers, you know, in some black raging fight that they have over the situation as it's evolved, if Addison says, "You're not special. I didn't pick you for any reason. You were just the girl, and I needed to pick a guardian, and you were there," and he means it. From a YA standpoint, if Alice is then told, "You're nobody special," and she still succeeds in defeating the evil or balancing the powers or achieving victory in heavy air quotes, wouldn't that be kind of a cool message to pass on to your readers? That you don't have to have somebody say you're special. You don't need to be invested with power to achieve amazing things. Or is that overdone?
I don't know about overdone. I really don't want to look at Addison Hatter as an asshole.
I kind of do. I mean a redeemable asshole.
And there's the writer's choice.
I don't mind him like coming across as sort of a crotchety old bastard, but then I don't see a redeeming quality in him.
Well, but he can have a redemption. He can have an arc. I'm not saying cast him as a villain.
Right.
I mean, go ahead.
I think what I would prefer, and this is, again, you know, this is where we get into the nuts and bolts and we get to kick each other around a little bit. My preference would be that he does say, "I chose you for a very special reason." She doesn't see that, and then she ends up being successful, not because of the reason that he chose her, but because of something else that's in her.
I mean, you can have both, but you know, you can have both. You could have him being that he did pick her because there was some special reason, but you can also have him saying to her when the Black Queen comes over, "You're no one special. I just picked you at random."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where the growth is. That's where he's watching her and he's cultivating this on purpose.
Well, and let me throw a third spin on there before you riff too far on that. What if he really did mean it, that he did just pick her at random, but
you're
at,
really like
just dude, chill. Just let me just riff on this a little bit, all right? Holy crap.
You're going to flip it 180 again.
You cut me off, all right?
That's true.
Okay, you know what? I'll be the bigger man. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, here it is. God, look, I have guilt debt now. I have guilt debt that I'm going to have to pay off at some future episode. What if, And this, I think, really kind of balances everything out. What if he didn't pick it initially? What if he just picked her at random because he was being poisoned by the Black Queen and he's embittered and whatever, you know, whatever his darkness is. But because he is a member of the Wonderland Pantheon, and Latrice, I think that's what you've kind of created here, this pantheon of gods, these icons, these immortals that are the cornerstones of Wonderland. As an agent of Wonderland, he still picked the right Alice. And his redemption is the discovery that his role as one of the foundational cornerstones of Wonderland is to take that guardianship seriously, and that subconsciously, he picked the perfect Alice to not only save Wonderland, but to save him as well.
That is an interesting arc for him then.
Exactly.
He comes around, he's like, I'm useless, I just pick any old random person. And then when he finds out, yeah, that's nice too. God, there's so many.
And Latrice, you did say you like the Hatter, right?
Yeah, I do. Addison's one of my favorite characters.
See, I think giving him his own arc might not be a bad idea. Brian, do you forgive me?
Well, yeah, but I still disagree with you, and okay. My reason is that if you go in that direction, then what you're basically saying is that nothing that happens in the story happens because of any choices that anybody makes, that it's fate.
No,
and
that no.
He could have chosen anybody.
He could have.
But chose her, and if he has absolutely zero conscious reason for choosing her, then it was fate that he chose her.
Well, we're running up against a fate or free will, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, as we should.
Now we've gone to the real deep end of the pool.
Now we're in the deep end, yes.
edges, boys!
I agree with you 80%. I agree with you. I like the arc. I like the idea. I think that there has to be something that then he discovers that even, like, we're dealing so much with subconscious that maybe he's not realizing what he saw in her until later. Well, and he does think that she's worthless, and he does think that she doesn't have any real talent.
Go ahead.
I think one way that it would be able to kind of work with both of them is as the Black Queen is further, you know, corrupting Wonderland, which is the source of these people, it sort of darkens their personas. Mm. So... Yeah. Addison would, in, you know, pretty technical terms, just become this sort of alter ego evil half of himself, you know, as more and more swallowed up by the nightmare. So he could essentially, you know, just get into this outrageous fight with her and say all these horrible things and meet them.
Sure.
You know.
And it has nice flow-on effects for Alice as well. I mean, you're pulling the rug out from under her feet.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have more pain for Alice.
Yes.
Which is always good. More pain.
Love
more
the
pain.
Whip, Alice. Love the whip.
Beat your character.
I think the only reason that I'm kind of so vehemently against your original, you know, he tells her she's worthless and yet she goes on and perseveres, is that I still just from teaching kids, it's hard for me to not see there be someone who helps her see that what she's doing is valuable.
Yes. Oh God. No, I did not mean under any circumstances that was not the case. No, Alice is a true hero.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. But I mean, rather than have her come to that realization completely on her own, have somebody who sort of helps her come to that realization. You know what I mean?
Maybe the Red Queen.
Like, a bunch of people. Yeah. Red Queen. Her mom.
Yeah. Her mom. Sure.
Right. Yeah, then in that case, absolutely. Yeah, make.
I don't know. Does a hero need somebody to tell them they're a hero?
Well, no, but they need somebody to help them realize it, to help them see it. They don't have to come out and say, "Hey, you are magnificent and you have this talent," and da 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 da. But they'll need somebody eventually to sort of sit down with them and hold up a mirror so that they can actually see who they really are. Especially if it's a teenager. That's just my personal philosophy on it.
Now, Pip, let me ask you this. Can that be done with a villain as well as an ally, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you make the villain complex enough, then, yeah, I mean, if you're taking the Mad Hatter and you're taking Courtney, if Courtney ends up on the dark side as well, then you want to have some other sympathetic character so she's not not left all by her ownsome on there.
God, and no. You're right. We've totally blown off Courtney and Odabeth.
Sorry, guys.
Totally blown them off.
Well, I know. I was one way if, you know, we're trying to, well, not trying to, but if we end up, well, if I end up, I should.
I love the bee. Let's.
We're just going to get together every week and we'll write this story right. Together. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Try with four. If I end up not using Addison, then one thing that could make Alice possibly be like, well, you know, what's so special about me is when Nefer does endow Courtney with Guardian's powers. Like, well, if she could just do this for Courtney because she feels like it. Why, you know, what makes me special.
Yeah. Then you can get into the whole Faith Buffy thing.
Yeah, and then especially if Courtney seems to be better at it.
Ooh.
Because she's embracing the darker side, and the darker side tends to be a little more powerful.
Oh, snap.
There we go.
Nice. I'm holding back my Yoda. I just see Alice, you know, with the Cheshire Cat, and she's on... Got him on his back, like in a backpack.
Oh my gosh.
Do or do not, there is no try.
Yes.
All right. So, Latrice, what do you think so far?
I think I have a lot of possibilities to work with, and I love possibilities.
Okay.
I'm totally psyched with it. I really am.
What do you think? I'm going to start drawing us to a close here. I think we've certainly... I don't know if we've peaked or not, but I think we've certainly filled Latrice's head with all sorts of several unnecessary things and many very cool ones. What do you think? What's your next step, Latrice? What do you, you know? You hang up the phone, you get a good night's sleep. Tomorrow morning, what are you going to start doing with this story?
Well, what I'm start doing is digging a little bit into the Guardian's origins. And, you know, how all this came back, the war where the Queen Nefer was locked away. Because I think if I can nail that down, it will answer a lot of the questions why things are happening now the way that they're happening.
Yep.
You know, decide if, you know, Hadda and Nefer were lovers. Is Hadda the one that bestows the powers? Is he bestowing them on behalf of some higher force who tells them, you know, to go pick this Alice, or, you know, how all that works.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I figure out just what made it all pop off, and essentially, then I'll answer a lot of the questions that we brought up here, and, you know, probably steer something.
World building is a great way to spark ideas. I'm gonna, you know, take my little one last thing and say, figure out what Alice's story is, figure out what the Hatter's story is, and figure out what Courtney's story is, and maybe Odabeth too. You know, figure out what is the story behind those pivotal characters that you've identified in your story, and let that inform the world and the powers and the story that unfolds. Because once you know what their story is, once you understand where they need to be and where they are now, you can start plotting out, how do I get them from where they are now to where I want them to be at the end?
I always like to know the end of the story.
Yeah. Brian, what's your parting words for Lady Latrice?
I would say to piggyback off of what Dave said, keep an eye on Nefer as well. Because my favorite stories are the ones in which there are moments where I almost agree with the villain.
Yes.
And I believe that the villain believes in what they're doing and that they believe that it's the best thing for everyone. And that always creates a really, really dynamic character. And then the fact that everybody else has to deal with that and nobody's going to convince each other, you know, that one of them is right. But I think that you have a very fascinating and fabulous tale, and I'm really excited to read it someday.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pip, final parting sage wisdom?
Well, can I jump off that? Yeah, no one ever thinks that they're the villain of the story.
Yeah.
So, I would love to read this story. I would love to see what you actually end up doing with it. And I can see that there's lots of opportunities to go really dark and then have some really nice redemptions and realizations from characters. Make sure that they have an arc and you know what you want them to know, even if they're about to die at the end or whatever. Something that you know where you want them to land, and then follow them through to see how to get there.
Awesome. Latrice, we always exact a vow from all of our guest writers that when you do write this story and it becomes a global sensation translated into 12 languages, and you're selling the movie rights, that you send us an email so we can post you on our success stories link, and we can find out exactly how much of this bullshit you actually listen to. Do you so solemnly swear?
I so solemnly swear.
Awesome sauce.
Yay. Then we'll be able to find out whether you take my side
or mine.
That's right. It'll be Pip.
That's right. No, it'll be mine. It'll be mine. Oh God, we've never had this kind of three-way dynamic tension before. This is awesome.
Yes, it's cool. It's called. I'm talking. It's a triangle.
Yes. All right, dear friends, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to admonish you now, if you would be so kind. As Brian mentioned, we do have a website. We do have a comment section on the posts for each of these episodes. If you do have additional ideas for Latrice, please feel free to post them up on that comment section. Eventually, the forums will come up. Also, if you're enjoying yourself, if you've been listening to these episodes and having a fabulous time doing so, please consider going out to iTunes and popping a review up on the podcast to let other people that may be wondering, is this
round table? Can I try and ask, try that one?
Oh, please. Oh, are you going to sultry up? Oh, yeah. Go, Pip. Go, Pip.
Go now. Go to iTunes and review us often.
Babe, step away from the mic.
Awesome. Awesome. See, and we're just, that's going to be, I'm going to use that as a promo, Pip. I'm going to put that on our 30-second promo.
Well, maybe I should do that. Hold on. Learn to enjoy the web.
Nice.
There you go. I love it. It's a freebie.
That's awesome. God, you are so generous.
You'll have to layer in a whip sound effect.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That'll be our bell.
I'll have a little sound bite here, and I'll just hit play. Awesome. Okay, but do as the sultry Pip did say, go out to iTunes, leave us a review or two to let other folks know that at least you think we're doing some awesome stuff. It'll also help our rankings in the search engines and make us all generally feel so much better about ourselves. So thank you so much, Brian. Anything else before we wrap up?
No, I think it was a really excellent episode, and I think that Latrice has a great story, and Pip was a fabulous guest. So thank absolutely. You both for coming on.
It was wonderful fun.
And and go write.
And go write. Absolutely, go write. Ideas are cheap, folks. The difference between a dreamer and a writer is the person that puts in the work. So get out there and start writing. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in just a few days with our next showcase. Until then, take care. Bye-bye, everybody.
Learn to love the whip. I had to get one last one in.
Oh, yeah.
Sneaked it in under the wire.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast. Or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.